It's 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob.
Well, I must be Mercedes then. And we're on Community Radio 3CR with Friday Rave.
Indeed, it's Friday and you're back on a Friday Rave on Community Radio 3CR.
Is it Friday?
It's not Friday. It's actually Thursday today, folks. So we're doing a pre-record today, but hopefully we will, Jacob and I will be back live in the studio at you sometime in the very near future. But yeah, it is Thursday, but of course, were you hearing this, it is Friday the 15th of May, which is Nakba Day.
Yeah, the Nakba Day, 78 years.
78 years. And of course, since before Nakba, Palestinians were being violently removed from their lands.
Yep.
And that still is happening today, as we all know. But
how long has it been going on, mate? I mean, we know we go back to the story of David and Goliath, with Goliath being a Philistine. Philistine, Palestine.
Mm.
It's always been going on.
It's always been going on. So we can't not talk about what's happening in Gaza and Palestine today and the ramifications globally, which we talk about a lot on this show, and most regular listeners to 3CR are people who also get out on the streets and for over 2.5 years, almost weekly.
Until the beginning of this year.
Until the beginning of this year. But there is, of course, the Nakba Day rally this coming Sunday at 12 o'clock at the State Library.
This Sunday. And look, it's to the Nakba Day rally we'll both be at,
yep.
Helping with the we'll be doing the sound and all that kind of stuff. It's starting at the State Library at 12 o'clock and then marching down to Flinders Street. So we'll be there. So again, come and say hi,
mm-hmm.
to either Mercedes or I or both of us. And but yeah, there's a lot going on at the moment. Just not just in international news, not just in Melbourne's response to it, but personally and individually in both of our lives. So apologies for doing pre-records, but we will be getting back into doing live radio. And next month is Radiothon.
Yes.
So we need to start hassling you about that. 3CR is supported, not entirely, but almost entirely, by your subscriptions and your donations. There is a little bit of funding here and there, but not for the core business of 3CR. We rely on your donations and subscriptions, and that's why we're able to say the things we say and give the news that we give.
Exactly. And yeah, it is coming up to Radiothon, and it's our radio station. It's people-powered radio, and you are those people. So in the next few weeks, coming up starting on the 9th of June, is Radiothon. But in the lead-up to Radiothon, this is the first official announcement, I guess, Jacob and I are going to be joined at Hard Out on Plenty Road in Preston by Uncle Robbie Thorpe, Tilda Joy and Karina Adu. And we're going to be having a bit of a talk about 3CR and why it's so important, a bit of its history that you might not know about.
Because it's 50 years this year, right?
50 years this year, and why it's so important and why it needs your support, and also how you can get involved in the station. You know, it's an accessible place to get to know a community, to talk about the things that we talk about and care about in our lives, but also to discuss those in depth and yeah, some of the history and contextualizing it into like Australia's media landscape is so highly concentrated. It's like the regurgitation of the same clickbait headlines that you see in the mainstream, which I'm sure 3CR listeners, if you're listening here, you're very well aware of it. But I guess
it's the highest concentration of media ownership in the Western world.
Yes,
that's Australia.
That's
it's
correct.
The most secretive democracy in the world, not just the Western world, in the whole damn world, the most secretive democracy in the world. And we'll talk about that all, I suppose, flavour or explain what I hope to say about the budget in the few moments.
Yes, but yeah, Monday 1st of June at starting at about 6:30, but there'll be more information here on 3CR, but an opportunity to let your mates know. Bring along your mates, bring along your family, you know, or people who think, you know, just need that little extra nudge.
Yeah, so that's the first day of winter, isn't it? It is. The 1st of June. So, you know, put your thermal underwear on and come down to Hard Out. What time did you say?
From 6:30.
From 6:30 on the 1st of June, which is a...
Monday evening.
Monday.
Okay. A Monday evening.
Monday night.
But, yeah, I guess you did mention the budget before, Jake, and we were sitting here and talking about we should do a show about the budget, and then we're like, well...
Well, we can't. Well, for a number of reasons. First of all, we've got to talk about NACBA.
Yeah.
It's incumbent on us.
And it's incumbent on everyone.
It's incumbent, yeah. It's incumbent on 3CR. But the other side of talking about the budget is you can't separate it from NACBA.
Mm.
Now, I've had a couple of calls from other people working on peace issues asking me to talk, how does this number work? All right, and I won't say who they are, but two of them. And I've said, look, the numbers don't work. And this is the thing with this government. Now, I gotta point out the 2026 budget. It only talks about the Department of Defence. But the problem is that, let me just bring it up here. The problem is that, as I've said in the past, the Australian government has now moved to a whole-of-government approach to defence and AUKUS. So what's in the defence budget bears absolutely no, I won't say some, I'll say absolutely no relation to what is actually happening in defence. I mean, you can pick whatever number you like. You can pick, you know, the Australian Submarine Agency and say there's a 37% increase. You can pick the overall defence budget and say, depending on how you analyse the numbers, it's anything from a 3% increase to a 3% decrease. There's money just disappearing. When you actually read the commentators from inside the military-industrial complex who are providing this information to military personnel and to military leaders and to industry and to the stock market, even they're saying, and I'm going to quote one of them, Marcus Hellyer, who works for Strategic Analysis Australia now, but for years he worked for ASPI, Australian Strategic Policy Institute, doing the breakdown of the budget for forever. And he said, defence portfolio budget statements is a strange document. In fact, we've never seen anything like it.
And I think putting that in, as you said, the commentary, and these are people who are advising or, I guess, talking about it to military leaders, to industry leaders and stuff like this. And then at the same time when we talked about Richard Miles' press club address, he cast off this and was like, oh, I'm sure you've heard some of the commentary, as if it was, again, one of those clickbait headlines. It's like, yeah. No, these are the
commentary coming from the insiders.
From the insiders, from inside your own house, Dickie.
Yeah, and this is like, as I said, a bloke who was, I think he was director of the Australian Strategic Policy Institute. And you know, ASPI had a split off, you know, they're no different to the left in some ways, the right, they split and re-split to do with, you know, Peter Dutton basically putting his own people in there when he was in charge. But now even they're saying, you know, that the budget doesn't make sense. You could read, and it's not just that. You read any major defence analyst from the defence side and none of them can make any sense of this budget. So if they can't make sense out of it, and, you know, they've got officers of they're economists and they've got offices of
and lots of money
people.
Dedicated to being able to do this.
And you know, what chance have Mercedes and I got of understanding it?
Yeah.
But and that's because it can't be understood. And it can't be understood because it doesn't make sense internally. There's no way, you know, I mean, how can I put it? Every part of the budget is now focused towards militarism.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about education. We don't include in the military budget the money that's being given for research into weapons.
That's
we're
right.
going all the way down to our schools with their subs in schools and aerospace and STEM projects. We're being funded by federal and state governments aimed towards, as Scott Morrison said, growing the kind of people we need for the Defence Force in 2040.
Yes.
It doesn't talk about the way our Department of Foreign Affairs, and we've always said on the left that we need to spend less money on defence and more money on diplomacy. But now the diplomacy is a military tactic.
Yes.
It's war by other means, and a figure came out,
or a term that's thrown around of, like, you know, if there's a diplomatic solution. But the diplomatic solution, as we have absolutely seen over the last 2.5 years in a much more acute way, is that the diplomatic solution leads to only continued war.
Yeah, exactly. And the diplomatic solution, we're going to other countries and lobbying them, and even to the International Atomic Energy Agency, lobbying them, spending millions of dollars on diplomacy to lobby them to say, yes, AUKUS is within the framework of the non-proliferation guidelines. Like, we've jumped into this and said it's within the framework, and at the same time we needed to go to the IAEA and spend millions of dollars lobbying them to say, yeah, okay, guys, you're legal.
But nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here. We're talking about housing. We've got another housing. You know, we talk about housing. We've got a housing protest on the 30th of May, and from the State Library to Atherton Gardens, and I'll be there. I haven't talked to Mercedes whether you'll be there at this point, but I'll be there. And we're talking about they're knocking down public housing. They're throwing people out onto the street.
Mm.
And at the same time, they're building massive housing projects for American sailors and service people and Marines in all over the Northern Territory and over in WA. And our own people are being forced to
live on the street and get hassled by new community safety officers.
Yes.
Who,
yeah,
just like a... the, you know, the probably worst version of a cop, if you could even imagine such
a
thing.
Well, they're wannabe cops.
Wannabe cops.
They're wannabe
exactly.
cops. Yeah, and look, I just realised, as I said that, we're talking about people living on the street, talking about homeless people and talking about the military, and as if they're juxtaposed to one thing and another. You need to remember that 1 in 10 people living on the streets in Australia are ADF veterans.
Mm.
All right, so it's like they're doing it to themselves.
And militarism, this is all that militarism leads to.
So we're not,
and it's not, and it's not just here. This is, I guess, you know, talking with, it's Nakba Day today, and so it's the people that suffer in war. You know, there's millions of Palestinians have been displaced here as a result of the moving around of money from essential services to housing people. Is the same mechanism that is displacing and murdering and genociding Palestinians in the Congo, in Iran. You know, this is the same mechanism, but it just happens differently. So when the Australian government says we don't want the conflict brought here, it's like you're involved in a conflict. The Australian government is involved in this war in a very, and not just in, you know, they talk about diplomacy of like trying to find a diplomatic solution. There is active engagement of Australian military embedded into the way things, these people are being in genocide.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier to me today about the Wedgetail.
Yes.
And the deal, there's some kind of deal being done with the UAE and Israel for surveillance.
Yes. So so many of the listeners will be aware that the E7 Wedgetail was sent to at the UAE's request in March. Yep. To be deployed in defensive actions, defensive measures of the UAE during the Iran war. Now, I think it was the Wall Street Journal released an article just this week, an investigation that there's been secret military strikes by the UAE on Iran.
Right.
And it explicitly states that...
During the ceasefire.
During, yeah. Yeah. But the US is passing it off. It was like the ceasefire wasn't really in place yet. So it's explicitly states that the UAE carried out those attacks with, even though the UAE haven't made comment on them,
yeah.
That using Western... they're embedded. Western military assets are embedded within the UAE's,
which includes the Wedgetail,
which is the Wedgetail. So yeah. The Australian government has explicitly said that it sent the Wedgetail to the UAE. It denies that the Wedgetail was involved in any of those offensive actions, but it's embedded within those frameworks. Now, at the same time, during this same time, and also I just want to note that the Wedgetail's deployment was initially for 4 weeks. It was extended again on the April the 13th for another 4 weeks, and it's just been extended again with the government saying that it on the 23rd of April it was in the UAE, and the government saying it's now being part of this combined force to open the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah.
So it's been there the whole time. But also at that same time, Mike Huckabee... confirmed that Israel had sent components of its Iron Dome system to the UAE under an agreement during the Iran war. So that's to be embedded within the quote-unquote defensive action of the UAE. And so what we're seeing here is that the Wedgetail, Israel's Iron Dome, and the UAE are working together on what the government continues to call defensive action, yeah. But we have an embedded surveillance network of an Australian RAF plane embedded into components of Israel's Iron Dome,
yeah.
Knowing that Australia has a history of knowing that Elbit Systems created a backdoor through its surveillance networks on sovereign weaponry. And so to say... Like on this very thing alone, I mean, there are a million things we'd talk about the diplomatic cover that the Australian government has given to Israel to commit genocide, that it won't even still talk about it despite the fact that since the quote-unquote ceasefire in October, there has been just shy of 3,000 ceasefire violations by Israel in Gaza alone,
yeah.
Let alone in the West Bank and in Lebanon.
Yep.
And so to say that Australia's military and the 85 personnel that have gone alongside that E7 Wedgetail to the UAE are not embedded within this genocidal project.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in bringing it back to the budget, there's $6.6 million in the latest budget for AMRAAM missiles for the UAE.
Right, yeah. And this is like... When we're talking about the UAE, all right, well, they said we're sending the Wedgetail over there, for example, to help the people of the UAE. The UAE is a feudal monarchy, basically, and it is one of the richest countries in the world. It has, for example, the biggest diamond exchange. It moves more diamonds through the UAE than any other country in the world. Now, officially, they'd say that's Antwerp, and UAE is slightly behind in second place. But when you include the blood diamonds, UAE is acknowledged as the biggest diamond market in the world. And how do they get these blood diamonds? How do they get the blood gold? By financing... like people like the RSF, the Rapid Response Forces, in the war that's happening in in the Eastern Congo in the DRC.
Mm. Who have just made a move to gain more territory in the last few days.
Just in the last few days. And all this is about artisanal mining for gold and diamonds elsewhere in Africa. They're also involved in Nigeria and Sierra Leone, their UAE company DP World. Jeffrey Epstein, a year before he died. While it was known, and we knew about his activities more than a year before he died, he was negotiating with the Nigerian government for DP World to have a trade zone there, and it didn't happen, and that went to Sierra Leone instead. But it's hard to know exactly because of the shelf companies and all that kind of stuff, but the UAE is the largest, investor in Africa, and its resource extraction is what they're doing. They are plundering Africa. They are the Belgians of the 19th century. All right, they are the same as, you know, as King Leopold. That's what they're doing. And putting all question of morality aside for a moment, why are we, when we're in the middle of an economic crisis ourselves, why are we sending one of the most sophisticated aircraft in the world to the UAE to help defend them, even putting aside that we know they're using it to provide targeting information on Iran, to subjugate the Gazan people, because it's all about surveillance and mapping and electronics. And we've also got, you know, UAE are building ghettos in southern Gaza. You know, Emirate cities, Emirate villas in southern Gaza. They're doing all this shit and we're helping them. And, you know, you might just say it's one aircraft, but this aircraft is so important, so technologically advanced, that last year, I think it was, the US Department of Defense decided that they couldn't afford, or they didn't want to go, it wasn't the best spending of money to get Wedgetails. They wanted to develop their own kind of thing. Now, looking at what the Wedgetail has been able to do with their forces in the Middle East, Pete Hegseth has done an about turn and said, we need these things. And is funding some of their own. So apart from anything else, this Wedgetail was proof of concept advertising thing for Boeing.
Yes, it's proven itself to be able to be helpful in any military conquest.
Yeah, exactly. This is where we are at the moment. And this all comes down to Gaza. Also, let's not forget, you can't forget the West Bank.
Yes, absolutely. And I guess, you know, on Nakba Day, we talk about, you know, we won't be free until Palestine is free. We've spoken about it on the show. It's been talked about on the streets for near on 3 years, yeah. And 78 before that, to say that this is a project of the genocidal project of Israel is one of a test case for impunity.
Yes, yes, and, that's a good point.
And so this is pushing, and Australia have just dived straight in. And a large part of, like, the most of the Western world, except anyone with a heart or any modicum of fucking morality or care or justice, sees that the impunity that Israel, the US, the UAE, Australia has been able to maintain and create a framework around this idea to not even mention genocide.
Yeah.
You know, and that is what is going on. Is the result of this is the military and destabilization in Africa, in Sierra Leone. It's all part of the same project to see what they can because they know that they can get away with it. And so you know, we go out on the streets for everything, and was like, okay, you know, and we ask or we demand, but what, you know, here on this continent, and it's happening here, Australia do it to Aboriginal people every day.
Yep.
The theft of land, the murder in prisons and on the streets. Let's stop like, you know, we're demanding or asking. Like, they don't give a fuck, you know.
Asking who? Asking the federal government? Yeah. Asking Anthony Albanese? Asking Penny Wong? You've heard people have heard me say it before. They've got no power. They don't even make the decisions anymore. They don't even make the decisions. All they do is sign the papers that are put in front of them. That's all they do.
Mm.
And while we're talking about, you know, that's what gets me about people talking about elections. It what's the word? It reinforces the bullshit that the governments of Australia have power in what they do. This is not about, when I talk about Mal saying this, when we talk about Albanese saying that or Wong saying the other, we're not talking as if they've made that decision. What we're saying is this is what they're saying in our name. This is them acquiescing to every indignity.
The decision that they've made is to acquiesce and to go along with it.
Yeah. And it's the least dignified position of any nation on earth.
That's right. So this Nakba Day, I mean, and every day Israel are murdering Palestinians. As I said, there's just shy of 3,000 ceasefire violations, quote unquote ceasefire, airstrikes and shelling, and they're taking out the Palestinian police. Israel are taking out the Palestinian police force at the moment in order to further destabilize, because what they don't want stabilization in Gaza. We know that. That's contrary to Israel's project,
yeah,
genocidal project. And maybe we'll get to talk a little bit about it this week, but at the same time, the commissioner for the what's his name? Mladenov, and the UN Gaza envoy.
All right.
Has made an announcement about the Gaza reconstruction framework.
Yeah.
And all it talks about is still blaming Palestinians, yeah, that they haven't done what's needed to do in order for aid to flow. They're still restricting aid. The things he talks about is contrary to what is being said on the ground by Palestinians in Gaza.
Yeah, yeah. It's all over the place. So that's about all we've got time for, I reckon.
It is all we've got time for.
And so look, but I want to say this was a bit all over the place, but it's because it is all over the place, my friends and other listeners.
Yeah.
It's hard to talk about one thing in particular, because the way the economy has gone in the last 20 years is it's more interconnected than ever.
It's more interconnected and more separated from actual lives.
Yeah. We'll see you on Sunday on the streets, on the barricades for Nakba Day.